It's Monday.
Shh, be very, very quiet. It's Ginny. She's in her natural habitat. Yes, she's with someone, but who is she with? All we know for sure, it's Monday, and she's drinking a mocha. It must be Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.
This is Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati. I am chatting to Madam Gundy, otherwise known as Kiran. How are you, Kiran?
Well, I am doing well.
That is awesome. So I've got some questions that I ask all my guests during the Monday Mocha episode. The intention of the episode is to inspire people to live out their week on a Monday and to be inspired to start their week in a very happy and positive way. So without further ado, Kiran, do you drink coffee?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How do you take your coffee?
Just a black Americano or an iced coffee.
Right, so you don't add any milk or any additives to that. It's just plain black coffee.
No, yeah, I don't, unless it's like cold outside, then I'll have an almond milk or a oat milk latte. But you know, I just got back from traveling for 5 weeks in India where coffee was like a real struggle. It was more of a tea culture, obviously. So I've used that as a way to limit my coffee intake and as a reset.
See, it's really interesting too, Kiran, because I'm from Sri Lanka, and when my family try to give me Sri Lankan coffee, I go running the other way, which is generally a very foreign thing for me when it comes to coffee. I'm normally running towards it.
I've heard that Sri Lankan coffee is actually really good.
Oh, well, I must be getting the wrong coffee then, Kiran. We need to have a word to my family, because the stuff they give me is terrible. I would not give that to anyone. All right, so next question, Kiran. Do you take your phone to the bathroom with you?
I don't.
Well, it's really good that you actually can segregate phone time to bathroom time, because a lot of my guests are struggling with that.
This is so funny. I love these questions so much. Yeah, so I don't. I think even like just with top of 2018 coming back from the tour, I've been really staying off social media. Like the last time I checked, it was when I got back to LA, which was January 10th. And I have a team, you know, when we have to actually promote something, which I, you know, just to be respectful to people who have booked us or have asked us to promote something, you know, we always want to have good relationships. But yeah, I've been really trying to be off my phone, because it's very difficult to create an album if you have like notifications constantly interrupting your train of thought. And the way my brain works is like, I really love to have long, like meditative just moments to get into my thoughts. And that's the same way that I write music. So I think disconnection from the phone has been critical to this phase of my life.
That's fantastic. That's a fantastic mindset. I think that's a lot of people are lacking that at the moment, because we're a little bit overconnected. But I love the fact that you have said, yeah, notifications do actually take your attention away and focus away from what you're doing.
It's about validation. Like there's a really problematic validation feedbacking mechanism that I noticed with myself with social media. Like I would post something and then find myself within minutes of that, like checking to see if anyone cares. So that's what the whole game is. And it's so addictive. It's just, that's, we're taught to like seek likes and seek validation externally. And I just feel like that's so detrimental and problematic, especially as young women. Because the wrong values tend to get reinforced by social media, whereby like more beautiful and vanity and sexual shots get very validated, whereas like actually doing good oftentimes is not as validated. So I was like, I need to be in a situation so beautiful and so spiritual where I'm good on my own. Like I'm validating myself. Like if something is good enough for me, that's enough. And I don't want to feel dependent on coffee or on social media or on any of these things. I want to feel free. And so that's sort of the more deeper mentality behind it. It's like, of course, I have to use social media and I value it so much. It inspires me. It makes me feel connected. It makes me feel like I can contribute to my audience. But at the same time, I want to calm down the sort of problematic need for validation that those tools encourage.
It's actually really interesting, because that was actually going to be my next question, is are you the kind of person who posts something on social media and looks for reaction? So you're already one step ahead of me. So congratulations for that.
I do feel like that's the whole sort of point of it. You know, you're kind of like analyzing what reacts and what doesn't. That was my job for 2 years when I worked at Interscope Records as a digital analyst. We would put up a YouTube video or a song on Spotify, and my job, you know, for the weeks after we post the song was to track the reaction online, because that's generating income and relevance for the artist. And so it is important. And it's like, how culturally relevant are you? Are you contributing something that's reacting? But yeah, at the same time, as I mentioned, I think it has also a dark side to it.
Absolutely. You can see the dark and light in everything, really. So let's rewind a little bit back. How did music start in your life?
I just loved listening to the radio. And to, I was, you know, 4 years old living in New York City, and the bus for the kindergarten driver, he would like pull up to all of the parents as each of the kids would get on the bus and play classical music. And then as soon as we'd pull away from the parents, he would switch the radio station back to the top 40 station, which I guess like 5-year-olds are not allowed to listen to. So we always thought like he was so cool and that we were in on the secret. And it was probably 1994 at the time. So it was Nas, Illmatic, it was all types of just amazing music that was on the radio. Savage Garden was my first concert. So I felt like music was truth. You know, I was obsessed with the Spice Girls. I felt like music was truth, and it was exposing me to things that otherwise I wouldn't have seen. And I valued that, and it made me feel good. I was like the kind of kid who couldn't even be in the car without music playing.
What I loved is the fact that you made a reference to Savage Garden, because they're probably one of Australia's biggest bands to date to come out. And we're huge fans of Darren Hayes. And I'm very, very excited that you've actually been to a Savage Garden concert before I have. I think I'm letting my country down. What was your favorite Savage Garden track?
Truly, Madly, Deeply. Oh. That's because my mom and I would like sing it to each other cutely. She'd be like, because it's a little and how much she loves us. So she would just be so cute, like dancing with us and singing it to me and my brother and sister.
Oh, that is fantastic. That song was number one for quite a few weeks on the charts too, so I can see how popular it was.
I was just going to say, you know, I remember I was 8 years old. I was living in India at the time, and Savage Garden was coming to India, and my mom had a connection. I think either my dad or my mom, either one of them, had a family friend who got us the tickets. So we got to go backstage after the concert, and that was my first concert ever. So like, it set the bar really high. I was like, ugh, I'm a backstage baby. Like, I'm meant to be backstage. And that sort of, like, over time, that meant like being friends with the right people so that I can get backstage, to then drumming for the actual artist whose show it was, to then the artist, you know, herself. And that transition was really important for me, because I don't think I ever thought that I would make my own music. And now I can't really imagine it any other way.
Wow. Well, speaking of the artist that you did drum for, MIA, she's a fellow Sri Lankan. So it's actually ironic, because growing up, I didn't have a Sri Lankan role model to look up to publicly. And it's ironic that the first one that I came across was called MIA, because every other Sri Lankan seemed MIA. But you actually did drum for her. Did she actually give you anything Sri Lankan or feed you anything Sri Lankan at the time?
Actually, yeah, we definitely would have in the green room, I don't know if it was specifically Sri Lanka, but I remember all of the snacks were always like dried mango, dried coconut, like things that felt very part of that world. And then we also, because the record that I drummed for and on that tour was called Matangi, which was really focused on Hinduism and Indian culture, and maybe the overlap between Indian and Sri Lankan culture, I got to crack a coconut on the stage and sort of in honor of like a Hindu puja and ring prayer bells. And we did pay homage to a lot of Indian culture and South Asian culture.
That's fantastic. What a cool kind of ritual, because not many bands or you see artists do that. That's fantastic.
You know, she's a true artist, and I learned that. I learned about how to, like, find your own freedom within the confines of the industry.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of the people that you hang with, who are the 5 people in your inner circle, and tell me something about them?
Definitely number one would be my best friend, Lara. She lives down the street from me, and she's my real rock. You know, I feel like we have like a very beautiful friendship that started, you know, the year that I moved to LA, cause she was my neighbor then. And even though we're in a different spot, continues to be my neighbor now. She's like performed in all of my projects. I've drummed for her for many years. Our birthdays are very close by. We have just a very similar outlook on love and life and music and passion and joy and forgiveness and empathy. And She's very emotionally intelligent, which is something that I really value in a friendship, because I love analyzing, you know, why something may have happened and how to sort of let it go. And we're very good at that for each other. So that's my friend Lara. I mean, she's one of the most giving people. She gives selflessly and unconditionally, and she's taught me a lot about what that actually looks like. So that's my best friend. We have a very, very special, sweet relationship. And then I would say Noor Khan works on my project. She's like, I always call her a young up-and-comer in the industry, because she's a senior over at Emory, but she was interning here in LA last summer. And I was complaining that I just couldn't find someone who can like move as quickly as I need them to and handle a lot of the stuff that I was handling on my own. And she just stepped into it and has been really doing so well ever since. She's just like passionate and smart and understanding and mature and gets shit done. And she's like a joy to be around. So that was like a real asset to my team, who I added on recently. And then the other three, man, I really spend so much time alone. I really do. So I wouldn't even fill in those other three spots. Like, no one else is in the absolute inner circle except for my family, my mom, dad, brother, and sister. And I speak to them very regularly. So that's a blessing too, even though they're not in LA.
Wow. I absolutely love that about the South Asian culture, the connection to the family. Because I just moved to New York from Australia, and I speak to my niece, probably, who's 10, every other day, and my family almost every other day. It's really important. I think that's something that I value, especially moving to another country and kind of seeing how sometimes that can be taken for granted.
It's true. I think we are lucky with those values. I think, though, when I got back from India, though, this past trip, I also realized how sometimes that commitment to family can be used for the negative, not only for young women, but for young men as well. I felt like a lot of times people are so indoctrinated to impress and please their family and listen to whatever their family says that, while I'd like to think that most of the time what the family wants is only for the best of the child, a lot of times it's more related to societal pressures and expectations, which is deeply problematic. And so that keeps the perpetual cycle of women feeling that they have to get married and men feeling that they have to do certain risk-averse careers that generate a certain amount of income. And, you know, you don't see the fearless risk takers because they're not even given the space to do what it is they want. And when I was on a stage in India, I said that time and time again. I said, please, if there's any parents in the audience, please don't encourage your kid to be a second-rate version of somebody else and allow them to be a first-rate version of themselves. Because I feel like that was an inner struggle with my family, especially with my father. And now we've sort of come out on top where I feel like I'm thriving, but as myself, and I absolutely have their support.
Well, I actually was going to ask you a question because I had a similar journey to you, not with music, but with radio, in terms of having some, I guess we've got to break down some barriers that your family is so conventionally used to hearing, like, you know, going out being a musician or moving to another country and quitting your day job that pays really well to be a podcaster sounds like absolute nonsense. So I could imagine that you relate. How did your family you touched on your father there briefly. How did your family first receive when you said that you wanted to, you know, use music as a platform and use it for the greater good to empower women everywhere?
Well, it happened when the marathon story had gone viral. And I think people in his own circle, independently of me, were just hitting him up and being like, this is extraordinary. And this is amazing and wild and major. And he was in India at the time and it was blowing up in the Indian press. And so I think when he really saw me step into my own and own my own voice and say the messaging that I felt destined to say, I think it sort of switched mentally where he sort of understood and he was like, okay, this is what you're meant to be doing. I'm seeing your impact on this major global scale, you know, let's go. And if music is the way you're going to do it, like,
wow,
I'm with you.
Fantastic. That's amazing how he got kind of inspired by your own art. That's quite the compliment.
Yes. And I think, you know, my brother and sister and I are really, I'd like to think anyway, I feel like we're really hardworking and responsible kids. And I think we grew up with definitely the immigrant mentality of like, we worked hard as parents so that you guys can have a good life and you better do something with that life. But instead of that do something meaning making money, I think it instead means giving back to the world. And that was really something that my mom especially, but my dad as well, instilled in us. And my mom runs an organization called the Giving Back Foundation. My father just started an impact investing company in India called Asha Impact. So giving back is very much the culture that I was raised in. And so for me, I was like, cool, how am I going to do that? Well, I love music and I love speaking and writing and thinking about gender equality and what that even means. So that's my mission. That's my passion. And so that's what I do every day.
I love the project that you've got out saying the female voice is the future. What really inspired you to do that?
Just simply because every time I'm around women, I feel uplifted. And a lot of times when I'm around male energy, I feel quieted. And I feel like I'm a very confident, outspoken person. So I didn't like how that made me feel. I definitely saw that when I was in college. I saw that when I was at Interscope. I saw that when I was at Harvard Business School. I see that when I like link up with male producers and I ask them a question. And the way they explain it is actually not with the intention of elevating and uplifting and teaching me, but more with the intention of showing off their own skills, which is so like cheesy and insecure, you know, and it's unhelpful. But then when I work with women, I often find not only is there like they're dialed into my learning and my emotions, but they have a genuine sort of desire to uplift the community that they're in. And I feel like those energies have the power to heal this very hyper machismo, you know, Trump era that we're in. And moreover, it's not necessarily about gender. It's about energy, in my opinion. I meet so many men who are brave enough to tap into their femininity and not in a way that might indicate their queerness versus not, but more just they don't see their femininity as something to hide or something that's a weakness, but instead something as an asset. And so that's really what my work is about. I say this in my song, how can girly ever be an insult? All the women I know are ones moving culture. Like femininity is something that possesses emotional intelligence. It possesses care, kindness, love, spirituality, ability to access your full spectrum of emotions, a desire to collaborate. I mean, I think femininity brings so much good to the table that can heal a lot of the problems in the world today. So that's why I push this ideology so hard. It's something that I think has the potential to heal the world.
I love the way that you just put that there, because one of my spiritual teachers taught me that she's one of the teachings that she preaches is Hinduism. And in Hinduism, they talk about the Shiva and the Shakti. And the Shiva is the idea, and which is a divine masculine, and the Shakti is a divine feminine. And without the divine feminine, nothing actually moves or gets, you know, manifested. So I love how you're kind of taking a similar concept to that and making it in a way palatable, or you're translating it into a way that mainstream people can understand. And you're promoting a unity amongst women too, which I think is also very important, because if we start turning on each other, it kind of goes to shit.
In every aspect of my life, try to practice what I preach. In the moment I had the opportunity to hire musicians and I have a budget, those jobs are going to go to women. When I pull up to different festivals, I think about how can I contribute to this space. Like just now we had Girls School Festival in LA, and I wasn't playing it because I'm not performing right now, but I was able to jump on the drums and support two of my other favorite artists, Boyfriend and Amber Kaufman. And that made me feel really good. Or every single Wednesday, I curate a playlist on Spotify, and I put on female identifying artists, because I want to be the sort of equalizing gatekeeper. When all of us are trying to hit Spotify up to put our music on and there's unconscious biases, we have an alternative route to get playlisted and to have a voice. So there is power in collectivity, and any successful, you know, civil rights movement of the past has proved that.
Wow. That's fantastic. And speaking of girls gigs that you're going to be playing at, or that you do play at, Dinah Shore is a pretty good one to play at, because you're guaranteed to have like thousands of women there to play. Did you know that Dinah Shore was a launchpad for megastars like Gaga, Katy Perry and Kesha? How do you feel about playing on that same platform, really?
It's so epic. It's kind of funny because this is me being like keeping it 100 right now. I feel like Dinah Shore is like so sloppy and like party vibes, like in a good way. Like it's fun as a bunch of women to go to a place where you can really feel like you can let loose and feel safe at the same time, because you don't have some guys around creeping on you, or obviously to feel safe in your own queerness. But I think I felt like my music is like too wholesome for a place like that. So when I got booked, I was so happy, but I was like, damn, like I feel like I'm like too sweet and like wholesome. Like the last time I like had a sip of tequila when I was like 16, which is 12 years ago. Like, I don't drink like that. Like, I'll have an occasional glass of wine every now and then. Like, it's just very, it's like very different from my aesthetic, but I felt so grateful to be booked. I'm like, I feel like I'm not cool enough for this, like, party vibe, you know? It's very wholesome and, like, cerebral. And I think so many of the people who go are obviously, like, some of the most brilliant minds that work all over the world. I just know the culture of partying in the desert during spring break has a very specific vibe to it. But you know what? I'm, like, thinking out loud, and I'm like, I kind of want to just go and also let loose. Like, what would that even look like?
You're going to be having tea at 10 p.m.
Yeah, precise. But, like, actually, though, if you see our rider, it's like, please provide us with kombucha and, like, raw nuts and things. And
I have to tell you, though, Kiran, as someone who's been to Dinosaur 3 times, and, you know, partly I was there for work, but I was in bed, I think, at 8 o'clock. Please do not share this with anyone, but if you feel that you're not being cool, then you know, hey, I'm cooler than Ginny, who's been there 3 times.
You're so funny. Well, listen, I'm so grateful, and I think the community that what was the founder's name again? I was on email with her. Yes, she's. I mean, that to start something like this and have it be the biggest is so inspiring and so needed. Like, I have the most fun when I am in female-identifying only spaces because I feel safe. I feel like I can actually. Like, I think I played a festival 2 years ago, Mothership. It was the first time where I felt comfortable, like basking in the rays of the sun and, like, not worrying about if people are, like, staring at me or looking at me and stuff. Because I think when you're around other men, unfortunately, our society has bastardized female sexuality so much that it automatically gets removed from you and becomes about somebody else and somebody else's gaze. And it's not about your own ability to enjoy your own beautiful anatomy and your own relationship to nature or the sun or whatever it is that you want or your own sex. Like, fine, that's fucking, you know. But I think that, anyway, I feel like I have to find a more intelligent way of explaining this. But what I feel about being in all female spaces is it's less of an eye fuck, a little bit less anyway, not a little bit less of an eye fuck than it is when you're around more hetero spaces where men are sort of taught that being a predator is like the only way to behave.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Kiran, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. I'm really, really inspired to see a fellow Southern Asian sister out there rocking it and spreading such love and equality, which is much needed education, I guess, for the young girls out there today to know that there is an alternative path to being a doctor, lawyer, or engineer. So, you know, I think growing up around this time and having you as a role model would be awesome. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. And for anyone listening who is coming out to Dinosaur, it's going to be amazing. I'm bringing a DJ and a drummer, and we're like designing this insane turn up electro feminist like vibe. And it's going to be insane. I love going to the desert. I love like queer spaces. I love what Dinosaur stands for. And I absolutely can't wait. Follow Madam Gandhi and see you in the desert.
Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.
This is Acast Recommends. Every week we pick one of our favorite shows, and this is one we think you're gonna love.
God bless everybody. I'm Corey Cambridge, host of OPP, which stands for Other People's Podcasts. On OPP, I sit down and interview America's top podcasters to learn more about them, the dope shows they created. In every episode, they even share with me their top 3 favorite podcasts. Check out my latest episode with Aaron Almond Updike and Aaron Welsh, host of the amazing podcast, by searching OPP with Corey Cambridge on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Acast is home to the biggest podcasts from the U.S. and around the world. Subscribe to this show and hundreds more now via Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.